Death Race is for sociopathic killers. You gotta have gravel in your guts. You have to live for the smell of motor oil and high-octane fuel. You gotta love the sound of rubber on asphalt and the taste of blood in your mouth. And when you go to sleep at night, I mean that deep, grim sleep, the sound of bullets whizzing past your head should give you comfort. So, Mr. Strong and Silent, you made it a stuff.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Death Race Retrospective Series.
Sure, it's violent, but that's the way we love it. Violent, violent, violent.
Hosted by Jacob.
Motherfucker's crazy,
but cool.
Stuart.
You have the skills I require to keep the legend alive.
And Brock.
Whoever named your car the Bull was only half right.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
You know what the Dalai Lama said about committees? Oh, that's right. He didn't talk about committees because he wasn't a pussy.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Sounds like the others are stacked against us.
Then do what you do best. Try.
Today we're talking about Death Race Beyond Anarchy, starring Zach McGowan, Danny Glover, Christine Marzano, Danny Trejo, directed by Don Michael Paul. This is Brock, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who's nothing but a couple drops of jizz sprouted from a shit-filled crack in the sidewalk, Jacob.
Yeah, you always put yourself down, Jacob. I think you're more than just a couple of drops of jizz.
You're better than Death Race 4.
I feel good being able to get that line out in one take, man. That line is a mouthful.
You know what? This movie is a mouthful. I'll give them that. Every time I think that it's over and they'll just be on autopilot, they reinvent again. We are, yes, in 2018, after the Corman redo, the 2050 movie, we get this Death Race.
It should be said, this was filmed, if you stay to the very end of the credits like I did, there's a 2016 copyright date. Like, this was being done the same time as that Corman one.
Okay. Shelved. Okay, yes. So it took a little while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I wonder if there's some contractual thing about who could come out first.
All I can tell you is I never saw it playing in the movie theater.
It did not.
And my video box that I picked up from the library says that it came out in 2018 around Halloween.
Yes. That's when it got released, and there's no rated version of this. There is only an unrated and unhinged version of this movie.
Unhinged version. Yeah, I noticed that. I've seen plenty of unrated. I've never seen unhinged.
I mean, it's not wrong.
See, I'm surprised you hear you say that it was filmed or might have been filmed in 2016, because this to me seems like a response to Mad Max Fury Road, which come out between the last one and this one.
Well, that would have been right on sync.
Yeah, they said that was getting nominations and awards as they were filming this.
Yeah. Summer 2015 is Mad Max. So if it's making it in 2016, it is very well aware of that. Again, that the apocalyptic road movies are hot again. I felt that. Yeah, for sure. Why we got two death races, essentially.
And I have to say, going into this one, this is part four of mostly straight-to-video films, like never a good thing. I look up the director, and it gives me reason to fear and reason to hope. Don Michael Paul, we've reviewed three of his films, believe it or not. All Trevor films, the last three.
I've seen four. I'm on the video game retrospective, so I have seen four of his gems.
Yeah, same with me. And two of those Tremor films are not good. Now, maybe that's not his fault. He did get axed. He did get stuck with Jamie Kennedy for two of those. But that last Tremors film, like, that is way better than any direct-to-video Tremors film deserves to be. Like, I got emotional because of what they did with characters in that.
Crying about Michael Gross? I agree. Who does that? Who cries about Michael Gross? I did.
Yes. So that did give me hope. I'm like, this guy really did a good Tremors film, which is saying something when you're going into these direct-to-video films.
Don Michael Paul lives in this world. Don Michael Paul gets a call. I imagine his life being like Monday, the phone rings. Hey, you want to make a sequel to Backdraft next week? Hey, you want to make a sequel yep. to Gremlins? You know, whatever it is, he's gotten the kindergarten cop that didn't have Arnold, that had Dolph. Instead of Arnold.
Yeah.
I was on the video game retrospective. If you followed me there, Doom had a sequel that was even worse than the one that went in theaters.
Annihilation.
Yes, he did that one as well. He also made a World War II video game called Company of Heroes. It had Michael Madsen in it and wasn't very good, but wasn't the worst thing either. You learn how to parse out the difference between terrible and unbearable when you're on now playing video game retrospective. And I would say most of his work ranges from bad to, hey, I don't hate it.
But the only returning cast here is Danny Trejo, who confirmed this got a commentary track. And I have to say, Stuart, that director you're talking about, he probably gets a call and goes and does this and that. Like, he seemed very enthusiastic. Like, he loves doing this kind of stuff. But yeah, he confirms Danny Trejo, believe it or not, and it's very easy to believe, was there for one day, but the only returning cast in this film.
Well, no, List is there too.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, one more. Yeah, yes. I maybe the only star returning. Yeah, I don't even know the actor's name who's playing List, but he's been there for all four of the rebooted universe Death Races.
Yes, true.
Even Trejo wasn't there for Statham.
Yeah, he is the linchpin. He's not a name that gets you to rent this, though.
No, of course not.
No, I agree. And speaking of names, when's the last time you've seen Danny Glover?
In a new movie? Or, yeah. Like, I just rewatched The Color Purple, so I don't know.
No, doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yes, we all remember his good work. I was really trying to think about, like, Be Kind Rewind.
What is he doing these days?
Be Kind Rewind was the first time I could even think of, like, him in a movie, much less, you know, he's a small part of that movie.
I had to go all the way to Saw for the last time I remember him being in something.
Okay,
yeah.
I can tell you, I saw him in a Christmas movie. It was a spy kind of thriller movie.
Uh-oh.
It came out like last year or the year before.
A Hallmark
we watched
movie?
It this Christmas. No. It's like an Amazon, direct to Amazon, and there's a sequel coming.
Okay, not much better.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it is called, let me see if I can pull this out of my ass here, The Naughty Nine. It's about these kids who are all bad kids.
Are there nine of them?
And, you know, they're on the bad list, and they have to help, you know, break into Santa's workshop to get, like, toys and stuff. And at the end of the movie, he does a Nick Fury, and he says, I need you guys' help. You need to help me out. And so it's kind of like a Nick Fury moment. And that's the last time we saw him. We had a similar conversation, or sort of what you just said, Stuart, the wife and I, because the kids have no idea who he is. We're like, gosh, this is where Danny Glover's been. He's been on Amazon or Disney Plus or wherever the heck this thing was.
Or he's been in a post-apocalyptic world helping people run over each other.
There you
go. Which is, again, just I wasn't thinking that he would ever be in a movie like Death Race, like an unhinged film.
Running a dark website, an illegal gambling ring.
Yeah, right. I forgot about Saw. You know, it does help me to think that he has done extreme violence kind of movies before. But I do think of him as a lighter comedic actor. Sure, he had some dramatic work, Beloved, you know, what have you, Color Purple.
No, it's Lethal Weapon, though. That's what you think of.
Yeah, I mostly think of him as a star from 25 years ago and that he's their big get. I thought he was Frankenstein, I'll be honest. And I looked at the box, I was like, oh my God, is he going to get in the car? He does not get in the car.
We're forgetting also that he was in the last Jumanji movie with Danny DeVito.
Didn't see any Jumanji movie in my life, so.
Oh.
Was he? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was one of the new cast members. He plays one of the old men, him and Danny DeVito.
It was funny. The director said how rare it is to work with a legend like Danny Glover on the budgets that he receives.
I imagine that is true. I imagine he was treated like a god on this set. He might have gotten like a whole tray of Ritz crackers with spray on cheese.
And he could not have worked only one day, though. He was in so many scenes here.
No, he was there more than a couple days.
No.
Yeah.
He was there all week, for the whole week they shot it.
Yeah, the whole week of shooting. I'm reading over his Wikipedia right now. He was in Monstrous Trucks. You guys reviewed that one.
Don't remember him in that.
Yeah, I did look at his resume, and I know he was in things that I've seen, but I couldn't remember him being in them. Again, I was trying to visualize seeing him in a movie, and quite honestly, it was like Lethal Weapon 4, Beloved. Like, I had to really go back.
Sure, of course. Right. Dreamgirls and all that. Yeah, I gotcha. It was surprising to see him here, and in such a big role.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, this kind of geezer teaser kind of money is hard to turn down, especially if you have Lethal Weapon cred like Danny Glover does for the audience that this is targeting.
And he got to go on vacation to Bulgaria. That's got to be nice.
I mean, it probably is, actually. I mean, I've never been to Bulgaria. I would go right now if I could. If someone buying my ticket, I definitely would go and race deadly cars if someone would pay my way to Bulgaria. But not necessarily great signs of good cinema. I will just say I came to this yet again with a lot of suspicion and realizing at some point, even though I've been giving 4 recommends out of 5 movies we've watched, how much more can they do? What else is there to do?
I'm always worried, like, they're going to break out the CGI cars and it's just going to look so bad because, like, that's what you do. Get the cheap green screen, go 2050, and I'm shocked they have not done that yet.
Maybe they will. Let's find out.
Well, give us a plot, Stuart. How cheap do they go?
Well, I won't speak to that, but you do recall that in the real theatrical movie, Death Race 2008, it ended with Jason Statham and Tyrese ditching the contest on the third day and escaping this exploding maximum security prison terminal island. Well, I think that incident has left Weyland Corporation changing their entire policy about incarceration and Death Race in the sequel. The private company is now using government funds to wall off a factory town and stuff 500,000 convicts in there without amenities, like no cells, no security guards, no path to freedom, I don't think. That if you are in the sprawl, you're there for life. And conditions would lead you to believe that a place like that would be, as the title suggests, beyond anarchy. But social order is maintained to some degree by Frankenstein. We no longer know the identity of the man behind the iron mask, but he is still there driving around winning death races, making new fans, and having popularity inside and outside this prison. And he is not going to stop death racing. No, sir. Congress has outlawed it, and they want to stop the blood sport. We have the warden of the prison doing what he can to try and stop death race from being aired on the dark web. And his solution is Sergeant Connor Gibson, a CIA operative played by Zach McGowan, who poses as a new sprawl inmate looking to compete in the next death race, so that he can kill Frankenstein on camera, which theoretically should kill Death Race entirely. And most of this movie is about Connor going around trying to keep his cover while he is qualifying for Death Race. He befriends organizer Baltimore Bob, played by a very enthusiastic Danny Glover. I mean, Danny is so happy here. He looked happier than any Lethal Weapon sequel I've ever seen.
I was surprised, like, how chipper he was throughout this film.
Yeah. He's delighted to be, like, showing him around how the race works. And then we have Liz also is back here. The nerdy mechanic is building this Connor guy a weaponized orange Camaro. But Frankenstein finds out that Connor is a CIA assassin, and he leaks that identity to the entire prison population, which doesn't stop Connor from competing in Death Race, but it's sure going to make him a lot harder to live through it, because everyone wants to gun and kill for this rat. You know, you got people like Matilda the Hun and the Fireman on his trail throughout the race. And to add extra insurance, Frankenstein is going to take Connor's bartender girlfriend, Jane, in the Mustang with him so that Connor will not be inclined to shoot at them. And so basically, we got a little bit different stakes here. It's a one-day race. Lots of folks are dying. Lots of stunts are performed. But we're going through 4 different stages, and it all comes down in the last stage to a showdown between Connor and Frankenstein. But the Camaro runs out of gas. Connor looks like a dead man. And then all of a sudden, this character we have been completely forgetting about, Gypsy Rose, blows in and reminds you that she is a CIA backup plan. Another planted assassin who rams the Mustang, shoots and kills Frankenstein, and tells Connor to get to the chopper because the mission is over. But for reasons that I'm sure we're going to talk about, Connor instead puts on the iron mask and completes Death Race impersonating Frankenstein. And at least Danny Glover is very happy about that as credits roll.
And Stuart, you brought up Escape from New York last time because they had those trackers and everything. This is the film that reminded me of those escape ones that we're going to take a city and just turn it into a prison like New York or LA. Like, again, I'm there with you. This is a junky direct-to-video movie, but this is your premise? Like, okay, just be a good ripoff.
Yeah, I would say, here's what I would say. They had moved away from that. If you remember the Statham film, it started with a lot of scary intertitles, basically saying, you know, they tried to do that whole thing in the steel mill too, that like jobs are is vanishing, and we are in this nightmarish future. And then the prequels just felt like they were happening in America of now.
Yeah.
And now we are back in Scary World. I think they say like 400,000 some odd.
420,000, get it? 420?
Oh, ha. I did not get it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I do now.
That's the level this movie's operating on, guys. You either go with it or you don't.
Okay. My point is, that's a lot of people to have nobody looking. And you just throw them in there and let them fight it out. I mean, it is almost like they're condemning people to die. I think it gets said in this movie that it is the alternative to the death penalty.
They're all death row, yeah.
Yes. Instead of executing all these people, let them kill each other. And so we'll just wall off a town and away we go. It's a crazy sci-fi premise, and we haven't seen anything like that since maybe even the Corman movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think when it throwed back to the Corman original with the destitute and the class struggle stuff, but they're not really pushing the class struggle as much as they're pushing good against bad, quote unquote. Like they want to shut them down because they're illegally doing this race. And then, of course, a huge dose of Escape from New York and a lot of Mad Max is thrown in here. You keep leading. We've talked about Mad Max for episodes, all these episodes in the show before.
Every episode, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So like this is the one we're like, okay, here we go. This is Mad Max stuff to a T.
I'll throw one more in since we're doing it. So all the things that they're referencing. I got a little bit of Purge here. And the reason why I would go to that movie is because what gets said is, they say a lot. There's a lot. We got a whole like data dump with intertitles and, you know, the way they set up this movie.
Too much data being dumped.
What I hear in all of this madness is the idea that this death race should not be happening. That if the people that are running this prison could take control, they would pull the plug, but they can't. That the prisoners want it too bad. And what I hear Frankenstein more or less saying is, this is who we are. This is our culture. We need to purge in order to feel, I don't know, alive. It feels a little bit like that one day a year where Americans are encouraged to kill each other. That is what death race has become.
Yeah, this does feel like their expression of their freedom inside of this prison. That it says in all these big data dump that death race is now illegal and immoral. Like people are like offended by this, but not enough to not tune into the dark web to watch it. But yeah, the higher ups, you get that idea, and then you just cut to this race. And yeah, I take it how you do. Like this is their identifying feature. Like this is how they maintain their independence by holding this race.
So I have a question. You brought up the dark web, and this is streamed on the dark web because mainstream audiences don't have access to it. They make it sound like accessing the dark web is as easy as going to the regular web, how much money they're making and things like that. Forgive me for not knowing, and maybe you do, how easy is it for anyone to access something like that?
So I did want to run some of this tech jargon by Arnie when they're talking about firewalls and all that. It's probably mumbo jumbo, but dark web, pretty easy to get on. Just get a Tor Onion browser.
Pretty easy, okay.
It's pretty easy.
All right, I just wanted to make sure.
Now, finding stuff on there is a different story, but it's easy to get on there.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I know you're not asking me because I'm probably the least tech savvy of all of us.
You could barely use the regular web.
No. There's some truth to that. I can do stuff, but a hacker I am not.
I can do stuff,
but there's, I'm not a hacker. What I take this to mean is, this is being run by the prisoners themselves. I think it's important to realize that when we see it is Danny Glover and List that are actually airing all of this, and they're doing so within the sprawl. This is not an operation that is well funded. I mean, it begs a lot of questions, honestly, of like, how are they doing this? And this movie will kind of show you how they grow the plants for the ethanol and all of that.
Yeah, they bring up the ethanol and how they make their own gas, but we'll find out the one returning star, List is here too, but the one returning star, Danny Trejo, he's not in Bulgaria. He's in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I like what they did with him, actually. Honestly, it would have been depressing to think that he got caught and thrown back in prison.
Yeah.
He is not there. You're right. He is the one character outside of these walls. But for the most part, yeah, what we're seeing are prisoners doing it for themselves because it is their culture. It is their personal expression. And maybe they're making some money at it. It's hard to know on the dark web how people make money.
Danny Trejo's getting money somehow.
Yeah, but we definitely see Danny Trejo putting in a lot of money. And we get a race that tells us right off the bat that this Frankenstein feels different. Mm-hmm. In the past, I've always felt like he was the one we were supposed to root for. And it's telling that his very first moment in this movie is running down a homeless man pushing a shopping cart. And he didn't do it for points. He just did it because he's being chased and he doesn't care.
Yeah, to me, it just signaled, oh, maybe we're going back to that Corman style where Frankenstein would run over people. And so we're going for something even darker, more violent. Okay, like I will make judgments about Frankenstein very soon, but it's not because of this kill.
Well, it starts here. I mean, again, it's I feel like last time they did a lot to have the audience think he's cool, and the people that he kills were the people that we might secretly want, you know, the doctors that set up old people to be euthanized, not the old people in the middle of the road. And here, he's picking on the most vulnerable. And so he doesn't look like a humanitarian, if that's the right word. He doesn't look like a Frankenstein I would cheer in the way that I have in the past.
He's definitely being set up more as a villain, or at least a person in power, for the very least. So yes, but I think what they're doing with this first kill right away is they're really trying to set us up back to the original. It kind of feels more like the original Death Race, yeah, and what they were doing there. So I was curious how far down that rabbit hole they're going to go. My answer came quickly, but I was certainly wondering at this point, oh, okay, good for them. I see they're going to try to go all the way back, but still use the momentum of the last couple. Let's see where this is going. My interest was piqued on where they're going to go.
Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we can say that. We know that's not Luke Goss. We know it's not Jason Statham. It's not even Dougray Scott. This is somebody new. And what I hear in the control room when List and Danny Glover are going back and forth is, we need a challenger.
Yeah, they're losing gamblers and viewers because the races aren't as suspenseful.
Yeah, this guy has won 7 times. He will never get his freedom. He was never going to quit racing. And so it's kind of not that fun to watch anymore. You need at least to have a good competition. Nobody wants to see a blowout every time they watch a sporting event.
It's like Joey Chestnut every single year at that Nathan's hot dog eating contest. You know Joey's going to take it. Not as much fun to watch anymore.
Yes, right. That's exactly my go-to.
Yes, exactly. Always.
The big turning point for me is the warden sees this race going on, calls in the SWAT team. They go in and they walk into, I don't know, it looks like an empty, like, indoor diving pool. They're standing on big platforms.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it was like an Olympic stadium at one point. It looks like it was a cool pool.
Yeah, at one point when they have dirt bikes, they're on a velodrome. So maybe this was an old Olympic site. Mm-hmm. But they're going to straight up just, like, all pull out guns and murder these SWAT people. And look, this is a dystopian sci-fi film. The cops are probably bad. So, like, I'm like, okay, this is them, like, making their point that we want to be us, we want to be free. But then the naked man with a chainsaw comes out and, like, starts severing heads. I'm like, okay, this is a different Frankenstein. This is not one we like.
Yeah, I just want to say that even when Frankenstein crosses the finish line and it's a mosh pit full of naked chicks on top of tires, I'm like, yeah, okay, I now get what unhinged means. They mean
yes.
It. They've said yes. It every time. This is the unrated version. Be prepared. This is easily the most in-your-face, grungiest Death Race movie we've had yet.
I mean, there's going to be a band, and that's a real, like, punk metalcore band from Bulgaria that they found. And the craziest thing is the director's like, yeah, this is the first time I had to film nudity. I'm like, well, you just dove into the deep end. It is unhinged, the nudity you're filming in this.
Yeah, you did. Okay. You worked a lifetime of it into this week of filming that.
Yes, indeed.
And you know what? I'll ask the room, how do you feel about it getting this seedy, this sleazy?
To me, this feels similar to Corman stuff. It doesn't have that satirical sense of humor to me, but it feels like it's maybe more like 2050. I don't know. It just feels like, yes, we're going to push the extremes. If you want a Corman film in 2018 when this came out, like, this is how those 70s Corman films would be, probably.
Yeah, and knowing that 2050 would have come out around the same time, that's a very silly cartoon movie. That tried to keep it in a cartoon realm. This one is saying, no, I want to offend you, or at least your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really offend me. I just, honestly, I felt bad for some of these actors. Mm. That's where my mind went, is that, you know, I just felt bad for some of them. They agreed to do it. They got paid to do it.
I mean, don't feel bad for the stripper on the pole. They got Europe's pole dancing champion for that, so she was down for all that exploitation.
I'm happy for her and good for her. And some of the grunge is kind of fun, like, you know, Matilda the Hun was a fun name in a kind of like a roller derby kind of way. And they do have some fun here and there. there, but the dirty, grungy, disgusting kind of reminded me of Fury Road a little bit, but at the same time, Fury Road didn't feel this grungy. It just felt like, you know, it kind of like they were channeling that, but you're telling me they filmed it at the same time or right afterwards, so they maybe had not seen Fury Road when they were filming this, or maybe they had, but it definitely feels like they're channeling the Mad Max looks,
yeah,
but, you know, without the same kind of vision.
Less money and less taste.
Yeah, tasteless.
Yeah. If we can't do those great car things, then we can at least exploit people that are willing to be naked. And I do feel like the nudity is shocking. I will just say, I mean, not in the sense of like, oh my God, I can't handle it, but just like, oh, I didn't know we were going to get this dirty.
But they like smear grease like on girls' boobs and it's just gross. It's not even sexy nudity.
Yes, yes. I feel really greasy and grimy watching this movie. And I never felt that in any of the other ones, even though they were all exploitation films that did things for the sheer TNA and blood and gore factor. This one earns that. And I guess what I would say is I took a breath. Yeah, the guy sawed off the head, handed it to Frankenstein. He narrates that this is the sprawl into the GoPro of the helmet of the severed head. And I go, okay, I need to accept that this is where we're at. It may not be my idea of entertainment, but I will judge it based on it wanting to exist in this way. I won't hold it against this movie that I feel so gross and dirty watching it.
And I don't know, maybe it's telling that I'm okay that it's going to go there, that this feels like that Corman film in just how little taste it has. And I also realized pretty quickly, because I'm like, okay, Frank's the bad guy. That means, like, are they going to drop a secret good guy in here to take him on? Which is, yes, what they're going to end up doing. And I'm like, that's kind of a cool idea if that's where they go. And thankfully, that's where they go, because that's kind of a cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the goodwill is that they still, funny enough, that list is still here as helpful.
It is.
Because that character always felt so boyish and pure. Like, it makes me feel, if they didn't have him and they were just doing all this stuff, I would say this is no Death Race movie. They've changed it. They took the name and they're doing something else. But because we have that returning character, and maybe Trejo too. I mean, the fact that we have Trejo running a gambling parlor in Mexico City and betting on these races, I enjoy them so much that they're here, that they tether to what we've had before. It allows me to, I guess, wade into the murk.
I was happy to see him too. I'm happy he's working with Glover. I kind of feel like this really dirty, grungy, disgusting feeling thing. It's here and then maybe one scene more, and then it kind of goes away for the most part. Enough of a way to go away. Is that like, certainly the camera doesn't linger on it as much after the racing starts or whatever? Or
oh, I feel there's plenty of it. I feel like the edict was every 15 minutes, show a pair of tits.
I agree, it's not every scene. There are moments where it just feels like your average straight-to-tape whatever, apocalypse.
Right.
And then suddenly people are just licking people on poles.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the woman's in the middle with, like, you know, gold greased up with the ribbons and stuff like that.
Yeah. That, and there's a lot of that. I mean, like, go ahead and let the race begin. Yes.
Matilda's talking about how she wants to eat some pussy. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I mean, there's language and there's language. And then there's visuals and then there's visuals. I didn't feel like it was wall-to-wall this all the time, thankfully.
No.
But yes, there was a lot of it. But thankfully, they understood that they had to show us something else to keep us somewhat interested. Thank God.
And some of that something else is Danny Glover and the old characters. And then we get this mysterious stranger trope, you know, which we've seen everyone from Eastwood, you know, the less we know about him, the more intrigued we're expected to be. This guy that kind of doesn't have a personality. I keep wanting to call him Luke, but he is a new character, Connor.
Yeah, he has no personality and no facial expressions.
Mm-mm.
It's remarkable how, like, it's amazing how consistently he shows no emotion. His eyes are completely blank. It's like he's high all the time. Mm. His eyes are so dead.
Mm-hmm.
It is funny. This is his first leading role. He did in other films. He actually got started in Corman Productions, so I guess he knows exactly what he's in.
And he's done legitimate TV. I mean, he was on several seasons of Shameless. I dropped out of that show, and I don't know what he did on it, but a recurring role in that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, this is his moment to show what he can do as a lead. And I think what he tells you is, I liked him a whole lot better as a supporting player or as an extra. You're a great extra when I see you as the star of a movie.
Well, my assumption was, because I think these are the best fights we've seen since the Statham one, is, oh, this is like a MMA fighter guy that does stunts and he wants to try to get into legit acting.
Yep, yep.
Because his fighting is good. No, this dude just trained. He is not a fighter, but I assumed, so like, I gave him a lot of leeway because I thought, yeah, you're a stunt guy trying to do a lead role. He was not. He's just a bad actor, but he does it where it counts, like with fights and driving.
Yeah, maybe that is his saving grace, is he's very fit and he can fight in ways that they don't have to cut up the, the editing tricks that we've seen them apply in the past don't have to be applied here. He can do the take that you need, kicking and breaking arms.
Yeah, I want to triple down on that the fight scenes are the best we've seen in quite some time. I'm very happy that if they're going to spend so much doing that fighting stuff instead of driving, that those scenes are at least worthwhile watching. And he has a couple of the same moves, which I kind of also liked. Like, he did that thing with the arm and a couple of times. Like, this guy knows, like, how to fight, but he's not afraid to use the same tactics. And I kind of, like, enjoyed that aspect of it, but it's still not character development.
Look, when we get into his character development, you're going to wish there wasn't any.
Yes.
I think it's telling that we don't know who Zach McGowan is. And he, you know, like, he could have, if based on this fighting, he could have been in The Expendables. You know what I mean? He could have that low rent action star career, but you know, there's not enough charisma. You got to be able to do something with your face. You got to be able to do something to charm. And I think maybe it works for you that this guy is not charming and a big blank, but he isn't. I mean, he just kind of blows in here, and we're constantly asking the question, why him? What does it mean? Did you realize that he was the warden's solution for how to get Frankenstein?
Yes.
Like I said, I thought that's where the plot was going. So when he shows up, yes. Follow-up question, did I guess Rose was part of it? No.
Okay.
I agree. Like, from the get-go, I thought it was him. And yes, from the moment he shows up, I knew he was the plant guy. I knew he was there to take him down. And from the moment he shows up with that hair, I knew he was going to put the Frankenstein mask on at the end.
Okay.
100% no mystery whatsoever.
Well, Frankenstein's got the same hairdo as him.
Exactly the same thing. Like, it's so freaking obvious who this guy is.
Yeah.
That when that reveal comes, I was like, duh. Mm-hmm. You know? So
kudos to you. I don't know that I totally connected that, but I guess I wasn't trying to get ahead of this movie. I guess because I was just recognizing it was weird. And again, maybe it's just all the boobies. But I just was kind of like, I just was kind of in the moment and not thinking about what should be obvious. That, yes, obviously he is a mole. Obviously he is here to whack Frankenstein. And obviously that's not going to be the end of this movie. It's not going to be come in, kill a guy, and leave.
What's not so obvious and never gets answered by this film is when Connor and all these new prisoners get dropped off, Johnny Law and some other of Frankenstein's men come to shake him down. Because apparently when you get sent to the Sprawl, you get a roll of quarters of silver coins.
I love that. Yeah, that's cute.
And they want their silver coin. What are these silver coins for? We are never told. I'm like, are they going to make a silver bullet later on to kill Frankenstein? Like, they make such a big deal out of these silver coins at the beginning and then never again.
He explains it.
I think that this is their way of paying for, like, we're not giving you uniforms. We're not giving you a cell. You're just going to have to survive in it. This is cheaper to give you, what, $5 in quarters?
$10 in quarters, yeah.
Than to actually furnish you with 3 meals a day and, you know, like the things that prisoners should expect when they're incarcerated. You get a roll of coins was a funny joke.
Yeah, and Frankenstein tries to explain it later on. We needed to fund our blah, blah, blah. It's, who cares? What I loved about it was that Connor put it in his hand and used it in his hand.
Brass knuckles, yeah.
Yeah, like we're putting like quarters in a sock, you know, like that kind of thing. Very smart. But yeah, it's kind of dropped and they don't really do anything with it.
What else are you going to do with it? Again, he's not here to survive. He's got very big ambitions. He wants to be in Death Race. Someone else getting off says, how do you get in Death Race? And the name gets dropped, Baltimore Bob. So he knows he needs that person. When some chicks drive up looking like they're going to Thunderdome, he hops in and suddenly we're at the garage bar. which is where we start feeling dirty again.
You get an entire like music video length sequence of this strip club. It goes on so long, so many shots spread legs and crotches. Basically, this feels like a trip to the strip club.
It is.
So when the movie started, I saw like it's going to run almost 2 hours. And I'm like, 2 hours?
It's a long running time.
2 hours. And then when we get to this scene, when they start dancing around, I'm like, oh, this is why it's 2 hours. Because he's like just hanging out here. He's like hanging out.
When you have the European pole dancer in your cast, you show all of it.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess you do.
Yeah, this is the movie. It'd be great if we could do some car stuff, but this is what we got. Let's do some pole stuff.
But it's also, again, it's the right instinct for a death race for me. It's if you're not in cars, there's TNA going on.
Yeah. I think all of the straight to tapes have had that mentality of we want to keep you stimulated.
But it's the most in this one.
If we're not stimulating you by high speed photography, then we will just, yes, exploit female bodies and just, yeah, it's ridiculous. There is some character stuff going on. It should be said that Frankenstein is at this club, sends some goons over. When he sees that this guy can fight, it really kind of starts their bromance. It really starts a conversation between them about, yeah, could this be my replacement? You sense Frankenstein's a little bit nervous that this could be the one to kick him off the throne.
Did you guys get a Predator vibe off him, too, with that hose coming out of his helmet?
It was those two wires coming out of the mask.
And then the long hair, like, because yeah. Predator has the hair, too. So, like, I kept on thinking Predator every time his face came on the screen.
The mask it felt different. It isn't the same mask, right?
No.
Yeah.
And this Frankenstein's all voiceover. They're doing a Darth Vader here. It is a different actor doing the voice than the person under the mask.
And neither one of them do I know.
No. Bulgarian actor under that mask that you've never heard of.
You would think, again, I half laugh, but you'd think you'd give this to Danny Glover, or at least an actor that, you know, has some cachet. I mean, not Danny Glover, but he was in Predator 2. But, you know what I'm saying.
As the hero.
Yeah. Well, Frankenstein is supposed to be iconic. He is the reason why people like Death Race. He's the reason why this whole city of convicts hasn't annihilated each other. And so you want someone with gravitas. You want someone with star power. And to not know who's under that mask, to not have a name actor, I think is a mistake.
I also kind of like that we never see the guy's face ever. I kind of thought that was a cool idea. But I also think it'd have been kind of fun also, like, if he did take the mask off and it was some other guy, but he had a horrible voice or, like, a shrieking voice, like Gilbert Gottfried or something. It'd be really funny if he talked like, oh, like this all the time. It'd be kind of funny that it was, like, almost like a Wizard of Oz sort of thing, right? That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Well, are they going for funny?
No, they're not going for funny at all. But I'm saying is it would be kind of a neat kind of thing. Like you take the mask off. In Mad Max, didn't they have that? Like what the big guy took the mask off and he was...
Oh, yeah. Master Blaster.
Yeah. That kind of thing. If you wanted to be a little more serious with it, that would have been an interesting choice as well.
Yeah. I don't think they ever go for ha-ha funny here. This is not satirical. No. I do think it's loose and raucous. But yeah, not ha-ha funny.
No.
Yes. No, you're laughing because you're like, this is this strip club. Yeah, I just got a venereal disease just watching it. Just my eyes. Yeah.
I like usually like my wife does not care what I watch. And as this was playing, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hope she doesn't walk into the room. I don't want to have to explain this.
Yes, it is one of those where you hope other people in the house don't find you watching it.
I paused it a few times. I thought I heard my son walking upstairs. And I'm like, okay, he cannot come down here and see this.
I'm working, son. Danny is working and you cannot be here. Anyway, let's talk about Danny Glover because he is at this bar as well. Of course he is. And again, I wasn't kidding in that plot summary. He is just delightful here. He is so happy. Yes. I always thought of him as the curmudgeon, I'm too old for this shit. And he just adores being on the dark web and doing all these seedy things. How old is Danny Glover? Like 70 years old? He is as vital and young and as fun. He's a real asset to this cast. No joke aside, I'm so glad he's here.
Yeah. Not even in a so bad it's good kind of way. He is genuinely fun to watch on the screen.
Yes. He helps this movie.
I'm really happy you heard you guys say that, because I thought I was going to have to go down on that one. Like fight you guys.
No!
I thought he was wonderful. I thought he was so much fun. And you know what's really cool, too? And I'm not sure if you guys picked this up or even know the reference. There's a Paul Newman movie, a post-apocalyptic movie called Quintet that he did in the late 70s.
Yes, Altman.
And Danny Glover's wearing an outfit that's very reminiscent to me of what Paul Newman was wearing in that. And I thought that was a really cool idea.
Wow. Deep cut. Okay. Quintet costume references. Maybe. Okay.
Maybe. I doubt it.
That was not brought up on the commentary, but who knows if there's even a costume person here. Danny Glover may have just made that choice and brought his own clothes.
Or I could completely be misremembering what Paul Newman was wearing, but it seemed like that's what he was wearing.
It seems like they've based him on Dr. Kevorkian, what I hear the lip service. Everyone wants to know what you're in for. And what I hear him say is that he euthanized 432 sick people that, you know, like that his crime is...
He does say, though, not all were on their deathbed, so maybe he took out a few annoying people.
Okay, yes. He might have murdered a few people, but by and large, it was a consensual, I'm going to help you pass into the next life, and that is a crime. And I don't know, would it be helpful to know if the outside world was more puritanical, moralistic? You know, they've outlawed death race. They've thrown a doctor who was helping people pass on. You could have played with that. I don't know what character, maybe the warden, you could have made like that. But anyway, it helps that Danny Glover is here and going to show our boring character the ropes. He's going to show him, you know, the course. And we also have this moment here where I think a food truck has been robbed by the Nazis. And we see people from the projects try to take it from them. And it's a setup for a bit later when we get on the race course.
Yeah, it's stuff like this, which you could cut this. Like, we'll talk about the scene when we get there, the supposed payoff. But these are Nazis and it's black guys stealing the food. Like, I get why they don't like each other. It's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. But I guess they need some blood, some murder. Like, that's something else they do every 15 minutes along with the tits.
We are not here for the satire. And I think that's just, you know, we need to underline that here. This movie's not so smart that we're just going to be laughing. And
no.
Again, I don't even think it's that funny.
It's in such bad taste, you might be laughing by how far it's willing to go.
Right. That is the laughter. Yes. It is the air escaping as I gasp. And yes. It sounds like a laugh. But yes, we're seeing some world building here. But by and large, it won't be long before Baltimore Bob walks the guy to the stands. List is there too. And he says, oh, you want to get on Death Race? You got to compete in something like this. I think they call this one Death Pit.
Well, they're in the Death Pit. That's the arena. They're just going to have a death match, they call it, which could be motorcycle racing or fighting, apparently.
Yes, motorcycle. Motocross is what I'm thinking here. This is where we see Gypsy Rose again. This is how she is going to be in the race, because she's going to survive the carnage on this motocross track.
And so many times we have praised these junky sequels because, hey, you did something new. And guess what? They got motorcycles. We haven't had those yet in Death Race, and that's a motor vehicle. So, yeah, I am down for some, like, motocross, dudes on zip lines taking out racers. Like, when you crash, they come out and, like, beat you to death.
Juggalos at that. Yeah.
The rodeo clowns.
Yes.
But this time with spiky baseball bats. And I got to tell you, it's gritty. It's almost disgusting. But at the same time, some of the stunt work in this thing is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The racing is good. The jumps are good. And then the people falling off the bikes, that's so hard. Mm-hmm. And those stuntmen are really doing it. They didn't put in CGI bikes and people. These are real people doing these real stunts and looking like they fell off bikes. And then when these guys just destroy them, I feel so bad for those... I actually felt bad for some of those people who wiped out and then had not a chance in the world because those five guys, like almost like hyenas, just jumped on them and just finished off the kill. It was quite an amazing scene. I really enjoyed this first motocross death match. The way it was filmed and the way the stunt work went, I really was into this scene.
And just the way, like, Gypsy Rose wins, like, that just that brutal thrusting the knife through the visor of the helmet and then, like, hitting it with her palm to really push it in there. Like, I like the brutality of this.
I'll also just say that, I mean, I think a lot of it is they put GoPros on motorbikes and all, but there's a really amazing, like, bird's eye view shot where they're over the track. Mm-hmm. Did they get that with a drone? I don't know. But there is, I just want to underline that, just from a technical standpoint, I think that this movie does... Yeah, cooler stunts. If nothing, I mean, it's not a better looking movie. Maybe a more shocking looking movie, but it matches the brutality, the in the face quality with these stunts here. And if you're wanting to have an extreme, unhinged experience, it's living up or living down to that expectation. And so we know that Gypsy Rose is going to be in it. Now we've got to get Connor in his fight, that he's going to try to get a car key dangling off of, I don't know, some kind of girder.
I'm glad it wasn't another race. I'm glad it wasn't another motocross. This time it was just a bare knuckle brawl kind of fight. Last man standing, kind of like a capture the flag kind of game.
I mean, it is called capture the keys.
Right. And you know what? Look, the fight choreography here is fantastic. This is the best fighting we've seen, I think.
This is why I thought this was a fighter guy trying to break in with a normal acting. Like when he does that jump with like the knees to the guy's chest, I'm like, oh, that's like a MMA move. Like this for sure has to be a fighter. But no, he just put the training in. Like, look, this guy's got to look cut with his shirt off, so he worked out. I guess his acting sucks, but his body looks great.
Yeah, but they made it look so convincing too. Yeah. Like clearly it made it almost look like he actually hit the guy, because sometimes you could see the punches mm-hmm. being thrown and the other ones. Here they didn't over edit it either. Like they edited it just the right way. The punches were set up, the fight choreography was done in the right way that it looked convincing. And not to saying convincing for a direct-to-video sequel.
This is Hollywood level A movie convincing.
That's exactly what I'm saying. This fight choreography and this execution of these fights is exactly what I want to see in any kind of movie. And I'm not couching this because it's a direct-to-video. It's exactly what I'm saying. It was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. They get me. But I will say this. My reaction is, oh, and then it's over so quick. It feels like a couple kicks, and suddenly he scaled up that girder and he has the keys. I'm like, well, I guess I should just be grateful for what I get. But they got me. He's still got one more dude. The butcher has got to come out after the fact. Well, there's some dude with a mask, and then the butcher comes.
Yeah, it's the boss battle. You have to have that.
Yeah, I didn't know that they did. I didn't know that they had to have it. I wanted it, but they knew that they needed it, and they're not going to make it too easy for Connor to get the car keys.
Yeah, I thought he got the keys. He wins. Next scene, let's get to this race. This is called Death Race. But no, then this 6'5 actual MMA fighter walks out with a hammer and sickle. This is why I go to the movies, people. Like, I am just a kid in a candy store with this kind of stuff.
So the only thing I didn't buy in this whole thing was Connor gets hit in the face with the side of the hammer, and I didn't really see that much blood. Like, honestly, a normal-sized person getting any kind of hit with that kind of hammer ain't getting back up. I know it's a movie.
Come on, you wouldn't question if that was Jason Statham getting hit by the hammer.
But Jason Statham's not here.
I know, unfortunately.
But then when Connor swings it around like Captain America with Mjolnir and just whacks the guy in the face a couple of times, that was freaking awesome.
And then he crushes his head.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yes, the death move, the Mortal Kombat move here.
Finish him.
I think we just need to, and we are calling out here, is that whatever we think about this as a movie, as a piece of shock violence, this will hit a spot for people.
Yes.
I think that you will be pleased. It is the most death in a Death Race movie we've had. And again, I felt like they've soft-selled that. And many times, I felt like the race just kind of became any old car race.
It's just a race.
Yeah, exactly, with funny-looking cars. And now we are really into the idea that it's blood sport, that it is not, who cares who gets the keys? It's about the woman with the Freddy Krueger fingers on, sticking it through the guy's throat.
So good. Ripping out a throat.
And Danny Glover, too. Can I just say, every time we cut away and Danny Glover is like talking about Joe Frazier and cackling that he's young again, I mean, he's making the scene better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I got no notes, Stuart. You're right. Like, this is a piece of crappy movie that is offensive and goes over the line, and it is very entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he has the keys. He's in the race, and we see all the... Maybe it means something to some people that they build the car. It's handled very quick that we suddenly just has an orange Camaro, and that crazy lady with the chicken feathers that drove him to the bar is going to be his navigator. It feels like it's happening so fast. And what's crazy about this movie is that we won't get to the race until the 80-minute mark.
Yeah.
It is not fast to get to the race, but it feels like some of these moments, they're just gliding over them.
Yeah, you talk about this montage because we need some more TNA. It's been a little bit since we got some. And there is this moment when they wheel this Camaro out and Bexy is on top of it, spread eagle. I'm like, okay, maybe this is a little too much.
Right.
Which is shocking coming from me. Then I'm watching this with the commentary and the director's like, maybe we crossed the line with this shot. Like, he knew what he was doing.
Does everything have to be, so vulgar? Yeah, I don't know that, again, maybe the answer is yes. Maybe the answer is hell yes.
It feels like a Corman film. I could give it that.
Even more. I mean, yes, Corman, but like mixed with Juggalos. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Insane Clown Posse, like join Roger Corman for something here. It just, there's an extra layer of tatted, pierced, pukey something.
Grime
that goes beyond the Corman trash. It does have an extra belch in the face. I almost want to compliment it at the same time that I want to run away from it.
It's a little filthy.
A little.
It feels like filthy.
Yeah. I don't necessarily enjoy being dirty. And so this is not my G-spot, I guess is what I'm saying. But I can recognize that if it is yours, you're going to be very satisfied.
And for someone whose G-spot this is, you are correct, Stuart. I will say I am being satisfied by this film.
Okay, so he's got his car. I don't know. Do we care about the Camaro? I don't feel like...
I just find it funny they call it a black Camaro at one point when it's obviously orange.
Yes, right. And it should have had a name. Like, right, the Frankenstein drives the monster. What is this thing? I don't know. Do we care? Should we care?
I didn't think of that, but you're right.
All right, here's something I don't care about. I heard you guys last time complaining about the love story.
Whoa.
And I was like, nah, you need TNA. You throw in the, even if it is in murky water in a jail cell, you throw in a sex scene. I really don't need this whole thing with the bartender. Don't need it.
I hate all this stuff about Mary, Connor's sister, that their name tattoo. Cut all of this. This does not need to be an hour and 50 minutes. Give me one love scene so it means something when Frank takes her hostage at the end. I don't need like three of them that I'm going to get dispersed throughout this.
And they choose not to hook up or they have a kiss only. And it's kind of nice, but not for this movie. I thought she was pretty good with him. Like, I think he comes across best as an actor in the scenes with her. This actress does spin what she's given.
She's better than him. Yeah.
Yeah, she certainly is like giving what she has nothing to work with, and she's making it into spinning the straw into gold here. She does a good job. However, I am completely in agreement with Jacob. We do not need this, and this movie needs to get on with it, because this race hasn't even started yet, and we're like, what, an hour and a half in this stupid movie?
It's 80 minutes before the race starts, and that is too long. That's longer than any Death Race movie we've ever had.
What's going to be really frustrating is that Frankenstein later on is going to be like, you got to know what you want if you're going to win this race. So I'm like, okay, so Connor, like, what have you wanted? Why have you given me all these scenes? I don't know what his motivation is to explain the ending of this film, except I guess he has no one on the outside, because that's what he says. So he'll stick around for Jane because this love is so strong.
Here's the thing. I believe he's giving her a line. You know, he starts out by lying. The first thing he says to her, he's from Long Beach, and then he fights, and she's like, you're not from Long Beach. And, you know, this is a cover, and he's trying to protect himself. But we're supposed to believe that dramatically, that he had a sister named Meredith that died in Long Beach, and he tattooed Mary on his arm, like Merry Christmas on his arm.
Like, yeah, it's not Mary like Saint Mary. It's Merry Christmas.
Yeah. No.
No.
Merry is on this man's arm as he's breaking your neck or whatever. That's funny. You can't play that dramatically serious, but it is the reason why he is going to stay. We are to understand from these exchanges that he has no desire to take that chopper at the end of this mission and go back to a world where there is no Mary, there's no anybody. I mean, that's so bad that you really should have just turned that into a joke. You should have made that funnier, because it hurts a guy who's already not very dramatically good. It makes him look even more foolish.
But of course, we can't have the race until Connor is found out. Somehow, some way, we don't know. Frankenstein finds out the truth about Connor, that he's a mole, and he comes with everyone in town to Jane's house. Like, everybody in the movie that we've seen comes to this confrontation of Frankenstein saying to Connor, you know, you're this and that, and Jane's pissed off, and everyone's mad at him and all that, but they still let him race. In my mind, they should have probably just lynched him right there, but they didn't. And they let him race anyway. Doing that, I like that he put Jane in the car. Frankenstein put Jane in the car with him to give Connor an incentive not to kill him. However, I really don't like this confrontation scene because the movie logic here is so... I mean, obviously, we're not dealing with great screenwriting here, but this doesn't make any sense at all for the movie we're just watching that Frankenstein lets him live here.
Well, I want to slow down on that just a little bit.
Please.
What is Frankenstein doing? I saw in the early bar scene that he saw this guy as a contender. This could be the new me. And he invites him over for a drink. He sends his woman over to sleep with the guy. It seems like he wants to be buds. I don't know. It would have been really helpful to know how he found out that this guy wasn't a bud and what that means now. I feel like it's connected to my thoughts about this whole Frankenstein performance. I feel like we did need to know and have some feeling about the actor underneath this iron mask. I wanted to understand his motivations more, and I wanted him to be able to play off this not particularly good actor as Connor.
Yeah, I think in this situation of the sprawl, if you are going to be a leader and bringing some kind of order, you would have to be fairly powerful. Why did Frankenstein want to bring that order? Because he tries to make the argument, oh, this might look like anarchy, but like it's actually a better place because of me.
Right. I'm the only thing keeping it from being anarchy.
Yeah. And so I thought we'd get a whole lot, like, no, we're not getting any exploration about politics or government or anything. I thought that we'd get at least a couple of lines, but they'll never go there. I don't know what I guess he gets all the quarters from all the new people. They got to pay him that landing tax, and that's why he wants to be king.
It's tax, yeah. Yeah. Frankenstein's best moment, at least in dialogue, is that he's like, you need to have an answer for what you want to do when you win, or you won't make it.
What is that answer by the end of this film?
I don't know that Connor ever does. I don't ever see the cheap version of that is, I fell in love with the bartender and I want to stay to be with her.
And according to the director, they felt they had told a really convincing love story and that people would understand it is Jane that gets him to stay. On. And that is, even if they sold that, it's a stupid reason to stay.
No. I believe Frankenstein is correct. He needs to have something he wants to do as king.
Yeah.
I agree with that as well. I think that's a really, if you're going to dethrone me, don't forget you have to lead this place afterwards. It's kind of like a threat. Don't be careful what you wish for, etc. But then I still don't understand for the rest of this movie, having for the movie we've already watched at this moment, why would Frankenstein let him live?
Here's what I would offer, that I think he likes this guy and is impressed with this guy's fighting skills. I don't know about his driving skills enough to actually want to compete. Is this guy as good as me? I think he wants to have the race.
Yeah.
And so he's going to let the race go on.
All right.
And he has the insurance of, if you're so in love with this girl, you'd have to be pretty cold-blooded to shoot at my car, because she's going to be in it.
Which, Brock, whatever the logic it is to get to this race, I like that development. I love that he takes the girl that he likes hostage, because to me, I'm like, oh, now what is he going to do? He can't just shoot that car up. For me, the viewer, it is creating suspense.
So yes, I also love the fact that he puts Jay in the car. I think it's a really smart move.
Motivations are bad in this.
Yes, there really is not a need in the screenplay right now, that the movie we're watching, for Frankenstein and the whole town to know that Connor is not who he says he is. That can come out later. It doesn't matter. He's still racing. Jane is still in the car. All of this shenanigans about him being a plant and all that thing, that has nothing to do with anything really here at the end of the movie, because the co-pilot still wants to go with him. The navigator still wants to go with him anyway.
Goldberg is still going to bet on him.
Yeah.
You know, we've been cutting to Trejo in bed with a woman and betting on him.
Showing her tits because it's been 15 minutes.
Baltimore Bob is still going to help him out. Nothing changes.
Yeah.
So this entire scene, it makes no sense to me. I get it. I'm not looking for anything here that, you know, should be mind-blowing. But this is like a misstep of this movie.
Yeah, no, not a great script.
But yeah, but the movie had some flashes of entertainment. When it tries to be a movie with a script, it keeps failing one time after another.
That's what I dislike it the most. Get rid of the love stories, because it doesn't like Bexy's gonna be like, I want to be your navigator, because she's got some revenge plot against Frankenstein, never comes out, never find out what her issue is.
Right.
Yes.
I really wanted to know that one.
Yeah.
I agree. She's more interesting than the bartender to me. And so why is she willing to sit next to a guy that she thinks is a rat and a CIA assassin that she would normally want to kill? Why is she willing to side with him to get revenge on Frankenstein, particularly since Frankenstein is Jesus, right? Everyone loves Frankenstein. Why don't you like Frankenstein? It is the missed opportunities that are evident, I guess, because we've had so much time. If we had been racing all of this time, I probably would have let this, you know, roll over me. But we've had 80 minutes to build up to the big race. And so you're able to accumulate a lot of things that you want to see that do not transpire here. But we do get 11 racers lining up at the start line. And we do get a lot of kills again once we get going here. And they're all real cars.
Yeah, we get, this feels like the Corman Death Race with these introductions of each character. We get their car. I love that. Like, we have it's a yellow van. I think they say they imply that it's a bus for Matilda the Hun.
School bus?
Yeah, it does look like a short bus. But you have a fireman. He has a Dodge Ram, not a fire truck. That would have been fun, but probably out of the budget.
Out of the budget. You know they wanted that fire engine. Yep.
But you have a guy named Dead Man, who the director said is apparently the Al Pacino of Bulgaria, but like, he's got a hearse. Like, I want to see a hearse race. Like, these are all the right instincts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Once the race gets going, the problems go away too. I mean, again, I know what I'm here for. I'm not expecting great drama, but it is an imbalanced film. Probably the most imbalanced in terms of getting to it, right?
Yeah. Like you said, an hour and 20 minutes.
80 minutes is too long. That is too long to make people wait for. I mean, I guess we had the motorcycle thing, but yeah, we wanted a death race and we should have gotten it at least 10 minutes earlier. At least.
I agree completely.
Hour mark. No, you want it no later than the hour. Death Race 2 pushed it the most.
Again, I want this movie to be 90 minutes, not 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm feeling that fatigue. I will just say some of it is that we've just been watching so many Death Race movies. But the fatigue of like, I don't know if I need... If this thing weren't in my face, I'd probably be bored. So I guess the thing I can say is at least the raunch is keeping me awake for these 80 minutes. And now we finally have... I guess we can talk about the four stages and what the racers go through.
This is not a 3-day race. There's 4 stages, but it's all in the same day, which was a little confusing to me at first.
They've changed it. And for no obvious reason.
Budget. For no obvious reason? No, it seems to me that since they wait for the end of the movie to have the race, they only have, time to do one race, and they're going to knock everybody out one by one. That's obvious to me why they did only one race. The issue I'm having is getting there. So we're finally here, and when they finally start racing, I don't know, maybe at this point I'm already, it's so far in this movie, maybe it's too much talk about this race that didn't really pay off. There are some nice moments. I guess we start stage one. Right away, Cleopatra just dies.
She had a Toyota Celica, which I felt like that's really unfair in a death race. But I pinned her for being the first to die because, Dirt, who doesn't even get announced by his name, he's just Warcycle because he has the coolest car, this motorcycle with a sidecar. He's going to get grenaded by Bexy.
Yeah, and maybe it's just Bexy, but we do see that that our racer, in this case, it's not Frankenstein. Our racer is this Connor guy. He is willing to kill more. Again, everything about this is more death-focused. That Bexy is throwing grenades to blow up that motorcycle. I don't know that she had to. Were they going to try to kill them? Maybe it was self-defense.
You gotta kill everybody.
It's shown so far, you gotta kill or be killed. I do want to point out that when Gypsy does shoot Cleopatra's car, there was a great, almost like a slow motion shot of the car flipping over and exploding. That looked completely practical, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, there was really, really a cool shot. If they lingered on that kind of stuff more, I'd be more inclined to enjoy what I'm seeing. This was really awesome. The stunt work and some of the practical effects here are wonderful.
And I want to just point out the fact that we won't know this yet, but like, this is the CIA operative. Like, she's the first one on the trigger. She's killing people violently. Maybe that's social commentary. I don't know. But I think it's funny to think that she's not in this just to do the mission of killing Frankenstein. She's going to kill everybody. But I don't really notice. A lot of things goes by. I don't really notice it. Yeah, the hearse flips. what have you. It seems like the most important thing that happens is when the fireman shoots the harpoon and suddenly Fish is on, and we've got to have, you know, they've got to be clever enough how to get off the line. They drag them into some kind of barn or some kind of garage, I'm not sure what it is, off the beaten path, and set them on fire.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled about this scene. It's not very exciting. Why are you getting out of your car to approach him? Like, you have guns and stuff. Just blow it up.
He's got a fireman's axe, though.
They're going to do a double full body burn, so I can't get too mad.
Yeah, the full body burn was neat. Of course, the fireman has to die from a fire.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
That's what they're going for. Yeah. I just...
Yeah, no, I get the irony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's not as surprisingly, maybe, because this movie is so in your face, some of these deaths are not as impactful. I can't tell whether it's my own fatigue or whether they don't have the budget or what. But yeah, it's a little underwhelming, right? The way Fireman goes out.
I agree, yes. Because I'm into this film still, and this Fireman one, I'm like, I'd cut this. Let's get to that 90 minutes. Here's another scene I'd cut.
Well, what about the Nazi guy getting hung?
Yeah, it's the revenge thing. The projects... Yeah. They come back for them that they hit it looks like, I don't know, some kind of explosive device.
A landmine.
Yeah, landmine.
I mean, we've had this in other death races where civilians have sabotaged the car, so I don't have an issue with this kind of scene.
Right. Well, there's also earlier the rocket launchers from people on the sidelines also destroyed a few cars, right? But the difference here is that we see them getting attacked, and then after the whole fireman thing and Connor gets back on the road, we see... the Nazi and his navigator hanging by their necks.
Nazi bastard and Nazi bitch. Please use their names.
My mistake. I
don't know how you missed that.
I mean, I didn't miss it. I just didn't use it. And they're hanging by their necks as he drives on. So we don't see that death. It was clearly implied. I don't think we even need to see them hanging, but this is the movie we're watching, right?
Well, that's the payoff for them getting surrounded, and then you cut away. You don't know what happened, and then they're hanging. Yeah.
It was implied.
Yeah. We think it's going to be a gun showdown. And who wins? Cutting away is, I guess, you know, it's a classic way of creating suspense. I don't know that I'm in that much suspense, but yeah, it's a way of being a little bit clever, driving underneath their bodies after we've forgotten about them, reminding you of all that's going on. It's a lot of people dying that we didn't have a relationship with, that
right.
Not having a whole lot of feeling about one way or the other. And the sixth movie in a franchise that has been doing this the whole time. Yeah, I'm not loving it. I'll just go ahead and say the race has taken a long time to get here, and it isn't the best race we've seen yet.
Then we get something we haven't seen in a death race movie before, a James Bond type stunt, or what do you call it, speed kind of stunt, where he has to jump a large gap of 250 feet that has a ramp, just so happens to be a ramp there at the end for him to do this amazing jump.
Yeah, when they don't use practical effects. Well, they do. I mean, a car was launched in the air, but yeah, this is Ferrari's jumping from skyscraper to skyscraper in Dubai in Fast and Furious 7.
Yeah, but the difference being that I want to see the stunt. Like, if you're telling me that they've got to go, I mean, I like the buildup. This car only goes 200 miles an hour and we need to go 220.
They got to drop the tombstone to get rid of weight.
Right now we're not going to have the thing that protects us. And all the setup is really good. They also fight out with the police cruiser before they get there. It just, once we finally get it, it's all chopped up. And I don't see a car leave one side of the road and land on the other in a single take, which would be much more amazing than the magic of editing, in which I don't know how much of that was real.
And yet here I am just thankful, like, this is one of the few bad CGI shots in the film where it takes me out. And for Death Race, the sixth film, direct-to-video, this budget, like, I'm not going to complain about it too much. It's not as bad as anything we've seen in Fast and Furious.
So my only issue of why I'm not high on this one is that I love the idea. I love the setup. I think they bit off more than they could chew with 250 feet, right? If they said 150 feet and actually had the car do it, then I would have been much happier. The fact that it's like this insane jump that I don't think anyone could make, no matter what car it is. I don't know about jumping cars. I'm not Evel Knievel or whoever's a stunt driver. I don't know. But I do know that they had to cut away. They had to use CGI. And I just complimented them on how they flipped over a car and made it go on fire, right? They clearly have some talent for doing some of this cool stunt work. Give me a 100-foot or 150-foot jump, and that would have been satisfying for this movie. That's what I'm saying. That's my complaint.
Yeah, I think you needed a good stunt. I think that would make all the difference between
huge,
just sort of meh about all of this, and being like, oh, I'm pulled back in. And now he's caught up. You know, like the whole point was that Frankenstein had gotten so far ahead while the fireman was dragging him around that he's made up the difference and now it's a two-man race again.
So I brought up Speed and I brought up James Bond. Those movies did actual things. Now, whether or not they actually did the jumps they were saying, there's a really great one in, was A Man in Golden Gun when he flips over. There's plenty of cool car stuff in James Bond movies and Speed has plenty of fun action in it. I just think that they're setting up for that sort of thing and the payoffs is weak. And I really wish that, because this is the point for the movie that everything else just, everything comes together after this moment, right? He catches up. Now he's back in the race against Frankenstein as a chase to save Jane, and we get the climax.
Yeah, the question is asked, do we shoot each other or do we race each other? And because Jane's in the car, I assume that's why Connor says, let's race. And then there's nothing untoward here, right? He just literally had a car that failed. Did someone cut the fuel line?
No, I think the jump. I took it that the car landed hard and the fuel line broke.
Yep, that makes sense. The way that they filmed that landing, I definitely believe that that car sustained.
I mean, that was a real car landing. We just didn't see the whole jump, but it was a rough landing.
Okay, so that is why the Camaro fails, and they're suddenly just sitting ducks, and Frankenstein can and is about to take them out. That even though Jane is like, you should go finish the race and win, he's like, nope, this is death race. The point of this is not for me just to cross that finish line. It's to kill my enemies. And the only reason why he doesn't is because the CIA was smart enough to put two moles in instead of one.
And I knew Rose was coming back. I'm like, I haven't seen her die. And I love, like, she flies in, T-bones Frank, and then just gets out and assassinates the dude in the head. And I'm like, oh, she's CIA. And that was one brutal murder.
Yeah. I also said, wait a minute. Rose hasn't died yet. How can they only be the two left? Yeah. Like, they didn't establish that, and then she comes out of nowhere, and then she shoots him, and she's another plant. And I'm like, why didn't I see that she was a plant? Like, why didn't I figure that out? And, you know, usually I would think I would get that, because I figured out everything else, right, with Connor as soon as you see him, but I did not even think. The misdirect here worked for me. I didn't realize.
It was her haircut. She had half her head shaved. You would have never suspected her.
Yeah, I didn't. I never suspected her for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I knew she was still around. The one thing I can say is I was well aware that it wasn't a two-man race because I was spending a whole lot of time, you know, I worked too hard trying to find the names of everyone in a race when I'm doing a movie like this. Like, I know when you have and haven't killed Gypsy. They know, every now and then you get a baby. You get an 11th driver that disappears with no explanation. But for the most part, I'm going to know when the people are dead.
No, they established Rose as a big character, so...
I figured she was coming back, and it is satisfying that she is the hero. In the end of the day, it's not Connor for all his ass kicking. She's the one that has been doing the job, probably enjoying the killing, and is now like, the chopper is here and we are done. And it's only because of Danny Glover, I'm convinced. I don't think it's Jane. The way I read it is Danny Glover is in his ear and explaining that, like, without Frankenstein, we're all dead.
Yeah.
Do you want to watch all these people be massacred? Maybe he loves Jane, but he could take Jane on the chopper, right?
I feel like they'd let him take someone out.
Yeah, she killed an abusive husband. She shouldn't have gone to this prison.
You don't get the death penalty for that.
Yeah, no, this is not fair. So they have contrived something where, like, yeah, I like that Danny Glover just kind of shuts off the feed and gets real and is like, look, we need a Frankenstein. You are worth nothing. But if you put on that mask and cross the finish line, you can save lives. And I think if they had written the Connor character better as someone that had guilt about people dying on his watch, have flashbacks to a mission or something, there are ways of fixing this.
Yes. This was my biggest problem with the film is that, it doesn't really give a reason for Connor to stay. They set things up. They hint at it. What will happen when Frankenstein's not here anymore? Like, have him set up he has more of a relationship than just with Jane. He cares about Danny Glover and List or something where he wants to keep order in this prison. That just is not there. And it's a glaring hole for me.
It also could be the actor not selling what he was given, even though he wasn't given much.
Definitely.
The actor does not sell this at all.
Definitely the problem. Yeah.
No. I mean, the director said this was about Jane, which I don't buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I do like the turn of events. I just wanted to say I like that the screenwriter came to the idea that this is a character that would stay. And even though he doesn't know how he'll rule, it makes me want a sequel. God knows. I thought I was done with these direct, straight-to-tape Death Race movies. But now it really does leave you wanting. Like, what could he possibly do now that he is the man riding up to the mosh pit? And I guess nobody can tell the difference in height, or no one knows, right?
Or build, or yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. They got the same haircut, so it's okay.
Okay.
You're going to have to kill the girlfriend, right? Because the girlfriend's still alive, because she'll know that Frank is not Frank, right?
Yeah, the fake Harley Quinn. What do they call her? Like Carly, not Harley, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So, Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Death Race Beyond Anarchy? Jacob.
I remember when we watched Tremors Bloodline, same director, and like so grossed out with Michael Gross covering himself in like lion's piss. I'm like, ew, I don't want this in a Tremors film. Yet somehow that is like the perfect scene for Death Race Beyond Anarchy. If someone was covering themselves in piss, I'm like, yes, this is a tame moment in this film. Look, listeners, this is not legal advice. This is probably bad life advice, but one thing I've learned is you don't have to be proud of everything you do. You're allowed to make mistakes and just have a good time. And Death Race Beyond Anarchy is just a mistake, but a good time. You're not going to be proud of it. It's, yeah, a lot of greasy, grimy nudity that is not sexy, but I appreciate it. And I do mean appreciate. I appreciate the way I appreciate John Waters. Like, you are just doing gross stuff because you can. You want to be iconoclastic and just go against the trends. So like if you see multiple maniacs, like, oh boy, there's a rape scene in there and it's one of the craziest things. It's all you'll talk about. Like, but it's going to push tastes. Like, there are films that do that and I appreciate that. So what I'm trying to say is watch Death Race 2000 and then get Death Race 2050, open the case, take the disc out, get the disc for Death Race Beyond Anarchy, put it in 2050, and then watch that after 2000, and you got a perfect duology. Like, this is the follow-up to Death Race 2000 I didn't know I wanted. Like, it's tasteless, it's brutally violent, and it's got some cool car chases. Now, there are problems. Yes, it's half hour too long. It takes too long to get to that race. Motivations are stupid, but I'm enjoying all the offensive stuff. Like, yeah, there's problems with this. This is a crappy film that I regret liking, watching, and recommending, but I'm going to still recommend it because, yeah, I thought Jason Statham was my favorite Death Race after the original. No, it's this one. Like, shockingly enough, probably because it leans into just all that gross, stuff to push the boundaries. And so, yeah, watch Death Race Beyond Anarchy.
Okay. That's the part I really want is like when we try to rank all of these shows. We'll do that in a bit here. But, your second favorite. That's a shock.
I'm shocked that I've recommended 5 out of 6 of these.
Yeah. Okay. Stuart.
Yeah, I didn't love this film. I find myself growing tired of the formula, growing tired of the world. Maybe that's unfair for this film. You know, it can't help the fact that it's 6th of a series. And so they do the best that they can to keep things interesting. What I can say is that they have definitely tweaked this so that it doesn't feel cookie cutter. We are in a much more aggressive, in your face, unhinged is a word I hear being used.
It's on the cover.
I mean, here's what I would say. I think the filmmakers have done enough to maintain the quality that if you've enjoyed what we've been getting in the past, this will be hitting some of that same sweet spot. I think the problem is when you binge on it, like we have, we're watching all of it in close succession, there's an exhaustion and this movie is just punishing. It's like the brutal last mile of a death race. But I think that if it had been a while since you'd watched one of these and you came back, they've captured a lot about the flavor of a trash exploitation movie that gives you what you asked for. I don't know why you picked up this box, but if you did and you wanted to watch something called Death Race Beyond Anarchy, you got it. You got Anarchy and Beyond. They got that for you in this movie. And I like some of the adjustments. I will say the screenwriter, in trying not to be boring and cookie cutter, I like that he turned Frankenstein into the villain. I like the idea that it's almost like America is the prison now. We're all in this prison together. The John Carpenter conceit of like this city is now the prison. I think there are a lot of touches here that kept me engaged. And certainly the movie is shocking enough to keep me awake. I didn't want it. I didn't love it. But I think grading on the curve that I am, this is still in recommend territory. It is still, if only bearable, a watchable Death Race.
Well, you know, I have been along for the ride with you guys, surprisingly, in the last few. No one was more surprised than I that I enjoyed the last two direct-to-video sequels as much as I did. However, I disagree with one of your comments, Stuart, that you said because we're binging this, it's part of the reason that this one went down a little harder. I think even if I had watched the other ones and came to this one a year or two later or 5 years later.
Yeah, it would have been 5 years if you were watching them when they came out.
Right. I think, have I enjoyed the previous one and then this one, I would have been coming for more of what I was missing, even though the last time we had, I kind of felt like leftovers or nuked remainders of what did get number two. And whereas number two had that homage to The Godfather, I was not too high on the homage to Ocean's 11 and The Dark Knight Rises. Here, there's none of that. This movie feels like it's a Death Race movie. It goes back all the way to the Corman stuff, which I did enjoy. I like the stunts. I liked some of the fighting sequences. This is the first time, and I can remember it since Statham, that I've enjoyed the fighting sequences.
Mm-hmm.
However, for the most time, I was like bored. I didn't like the lead. The exploitation stuff was, you know, it certainly had shock value to it. But then, you know, just like anything else, you see too much of it, you kind of get like assimilated to it. Like, okay, show me something else now. If you keep lingering on these poor women, you know, greased up and trying to look, well, I think they think they're sexy. The extras from Mad Max, you know, good they're getting work, but, you know, a lot of lingering shots that really could have been trimmed down. If this thing was 20 minutes shorter, I might be a little more forgiving. I'm going to give it a not recommend. I will not return to this one. If I had a Jones for a Death Race movie, I would not return to this one. And so that is really the difference for me between a recommend and a not recommend for this particular title. Everything that the other ones did well or well enough, there wasn't enough of that here for me to give it a green arrow. So I'm going red for this one.
Yeah, understandable. Let's do it, though. If you can, what is your ranking? I'll start.
Please.
They're all going to be different. That's what's so much fun.
Yeah, of course they are.
I'm starting with three, with Inferno. And then I'm going to 2000, the original Corman, and then I'm going to Death Race 2. Then I think it's kind of a toss-up between two stupid movies that I sort of gave a pass. This one for being the hard-edged in your face, and then 2050 for being the cartoon. And then the only one I don't like is the one that probably everyone saw, if they saw any of them. This is the major motion picture with Jason Statham. It did not legitimize the exploitation nature of the premise and was just a badly made film.
Jacob, what about you?
And I'm going to go with the original, the classic, Death Race 2000. And then, yeah, Beyond Anarchy. Like, I feel like that, and you can stop there. Like, just watch those two. But then Statham, like that's like a legitimate film. And if you're a Jason Statham fan, I think it's a good film. Death Race 2, Death Race 3, and then 2050, which didn't get a recommend, but it was just on the line. So, yeah, pretty positive series overall.
I'm going to go 2 as my favorite.
Wow.
I liked 2 a lot.
2, wow, okay.
Yeah, then my number 2 for me is Statham.
Okay.
I enjoy the Statham one.
I'm loving this, all right.
Then the original is 2000, the original one.
Uh-huh.
Death Race 2000. And then after that, I guess I like 3 uh-huh. more than I like 4 in 2050. The question is, do I like 4 more than 2050, or do I like 2050 yeah. more than 4? I'm going to go 4 2050. So for me, it's 2 Statham, the original, 3, 4, 2050. I thought 2050 just was not that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. There are two sides of the same coin in my mind. Like, there's something about Beyond Anarchy being in one direction and 2050 going in the other. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just that I didn't like those last two ones, and 3 was, you know, a bare recommend, like a barely recommending it. So, yeah.
Can I just say, I just want to put out the top, even though in an unprecedented move, I have recommended 5 out of 6
yes.
movies. I don't think I've ever done that. I don't think there's a series a lot. You would think that this is my favorite movie series of all time. If you didn't want to watch any of these movies, I wouldn't beg you to. I mean, yeah. I am not a fan of this series. It is a cheap exploitation film that you might get your rocks off on and has a couple laughs.
And I'm saying if you like cheap exploitation films, watch this series. I like those kind of films. It was, look, I thought after Statham, we were in for a real bad time. This has been a pleasant surprise. Maybe I'll got to give more direct-to-video sequels. Maybe Kindergarten Cop 2 is actually an entertaining film. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, so Jacob's going to be definitely on that retrospective when we get there.
Not it.
I would actually say that if you like the Statham one, you're going to like 2 and 3. Like, there's no reason why you wouldn't.
You'll like the other ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, they support him.
So, like, if you go for anything, if you're curious at all, if you listen to this entire series, honestly, if you stick with Statham 2 and 3, you'll probably have a pretty good time. If you throw in the original and then that sequel and then the other one, I mean, you could do that. But I agree with Stuart. None of these movies are exceptional.
No, they're not good movies.
But they have some stuff there that you can enjoy. There's some things to enjoy here. There's some nuggets. And then there's actually a surprisingly entertaining movie that had no reason to be in number 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
honestly, my recommend is we got one more week. Furiosa is out. Go watch Fury Road again. Get excited like I am. And in the meantime, we're going to just cover one more badass road warrior that we haven't gotten to, but we needed to. Echo.
Your favorite Marvel character.
My favorite Marvel character. She's going to be just awesome. I know it. When we get to this Disney Plus show.
Can you imagine the Emmys for acting that's going to win?
Everything. I'm living for it. Poor Furiosa that she's got to follow up the Disney Plus show we're covering next Tuesday. And don't forget, Friday, we just had a new Planet of the Apes movie. We are covering Kingdom of the Apes for donors of that level this Friday. And Apes is important because it is the kickoff to our new summer-fall donation drive. We're done with Buddy Cops for the most part, and we're moving on starting this Friday with the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and then we get into Silver Level, The Crow, Brandon Lee's original, all the way to the new film that's going to come out at the end of August, and then we've got for Platinum Level, right in the middle of summer, Ty West, a horror enthusiast, has a series, a trilogy, really, with Mia Goth that he started a few years ago that has really been captivating. And he's got a new movie called Maxine with three X's, because the first of that trilogy is X.
Yeah, not to be confused with the Vin Diesel franchise. This is not Triple X.
Definitely don't. Now, it's not Triple X, although it is about pornography, so it gets confusing. But just Google Ty West, no Vin Diesel, and you'll see X, Pearl, and Maxine. And then as we kick into the fall, we're going to get Alien. It's coming back. My favorite extraterrestrial body horror movie.
So much is coming back.
And for Gold Level, we're tying into that with a series I think is pretty close to Alien, Body Snatchers, starting with the 1956 movie and going all the way through the thing that Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman did at the 2000s, and then four additional movies that have alien body horror invested in them, which means The Hidden with Kyle MacLachlan, The Faculty, Robert Rodriguez made a teen alien invasion in the 90s. In 2000s, we had Stephanie Meyer of Twilight fame trying to write a different book series, The Host. We're going to cover that one. And then just last year, the creators of Stranger Things tried their hand at alien invasion with a really unique gimmick, No One Will Save You. That will be the close of Gold Level. And in between, we have so many other series coming back, from Quiet Place to M. Night Shyamalan's Trap to a reboot of Rosemary's Baby.
Who saw that coming?
Not me. I mean, I just added it last week to the schedule. I was like, oh, crap. We found the room. And so that should be before Halloween. All of this will be wrapping up before we get to Thanksgiving. And you guys know the tiers, the donation levels. If you go to our webpage, nowplayingpodcast.com, all the details are there. But it really does start this weekend with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I really hope you can join us.
I'm looking forward to that Planet of the Apes movie. I'm actually looking forward to the Furiosa very much as well. And so to the next time we guys get into the car together, I don't know when that's going to be, but I'm looking forward to that. I had a lot of fun doing a series with the three of us. It's been a long time since the three of us have been on a series, just the three of us. So
yeah,
certainly welcome the next opportunity for that, because, oh, damn, I love this game.
Well, America, there you have it!
Thank you for listening to this Now Playing Podcast movie review.
My pleasure.
Support from listeners like you keeps Now Playing Podcast on the air.
What'd you expect? Another pretty face?
You can donate directly by tapping the support button at nowplayingpodcast.com.
It's time for action.
You can also compare notes with us on Letterboxd. Go to letterboxd.com/nowplaying to see what our hosts are watching when we're not recording podcasts. And follow Now Playing on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our YouTube channel.
Why can't they see me as I see myself? A kind, gentle soul imprisoned by abs of steel.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
He moves them, inspires them.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
You're very good at what you do, and I'm very good at what I do.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Took the best, made it better.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
I swear by St. Dwayne the Rock Johnson, I will slap that sinful tramp!
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
If you want to drive again next year, Mr. Viterbo, you'll keep those opinions to yourself.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
Don't talk to the other drivers. Frank never did part of the mystique. Let the mask do the work.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
You got that right.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Good night, Mr. Frankenstein.
It's funny that this is the same director who did Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell, where you... Was it that one? Which?
It was Shrieker Island was the good one.
It wasn't Shrieker Island. Which one does Michael Gross cover himself in piss? That's when they're on the safari.
That was the one they went to Africa, right?
Yeah, was that the one before Cold Day in Hell?
It was the fifth one. Whatever the...
I should have looked this up.
Don't ask me Tremors sequel names. That's cruel.
I thought it was Cold Day in Hell, and I just realized, no, that's not it.
No, Cold Day in Hell was the sixth one.
Yeah.
And then the fifth one, they were in Africa.
That's the one I'm looking for.
It is the one with the piss.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you what the name is. Bloodlines.
Bloodlines.
Is it? Yeah, it is Bloodlines. I made that as a joke.
Another common...
But yes. It is Bloodlines.
It is. It is Bloodlines. Okay.
I tell you, every series lives long enough. If it lives long enough, it will have a Bloodlines. It will.
Certainly welcome the next opportunity for that, because oh dang. Oh dang. Listen to me. I'm cleaning it up. Damn, I love this game.